vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, this evening, the views of Bob Chapman. Now, if you have not already guessed, I have a laryngitis. So Bob is going to do most of the talking tonight, and I'm going to sit here and listen. But we are entering some very difficult and trying times. Here's the situation. In an effort to keep the economy from collapsing, they began lowering the interest rates after the collapse of the stock market. In the year 2000, we got the interest rate down to about 1%, and they kept it there for a long time, which made that it was very easy to borrow money. You could borrow money very easily. It didn't cost you much. When you can borrow money easily, everybody's got a lot of money, everything is prosperous, everybody is happy, there's lots of money in the economy, and then, of course, you begin to get inflation. So then they have to begin raising the interest rates to keep from getting runaway inflation and destroying the value of the currency. Now they're in a situation where they can't raise the interest rates any higher. If they do, they're going to cut off the collapse the economy. If they lower the interest rates, they collapse the dollar. So, Bob Chapman, what are they going to do?
Well, I think they're going to stay in that box for a while. And I think that because of their experiences during the late 1930s when they raised rates and caused a depression, I think that they're going to go the other way all the way, and that is they will continue to create money and credit, and they will leave the interest rate where it is as long as they can. Now, other countries have done the same thing with money and credit. They've been increasing at a rate in major countries between 10 and 14%. In a couple of countries, China and Russia, the figures are 16.75% and 47%. I believe that those figures will probably continue, and that's why foreign central banks have been raising interest rates to try to ward off inflation. I don't know whether we can believe their official statistics any more than we can those of the United States government. The U.S. government lies about everything. I think some countries do give good statistics and some don't. I don't think the United Kingdom gives good figures. Now, do I believe the figures that have come out of Australia and New Zealand? I think the French fiddle with them, and the Italians certainly do, and Spain does, Portugal does, but I don't think Germany does, and I'm sure Switzerland doesn't. And the Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, you get bona fide figures from them. But the numbers are high on the creation of money and credit, and so that's the way that they are all headed. And I think if you look at history, monetary history, you'll find that what they do, have done, is continue to inflate until people either can't or won't use credit anymore. And I'm beginning to see signs of that. The increase in credit usage has declined.
Hold that thought right there, Bob. Hold it right there. All right, well, Bob is saying that the use of credit is decreasing. Pick the story up there.
It has declined among the usage of business, but it's still up 9%. The decline is more pronounced in personal borrowing, and their percentage of usage of GDP, which is about 70%, I think at one time it got up to around 71 to 71.5 a couple of years ago, but I think that that figure has come down, and I think it will continue to come down, because if you notice, I ran a piece about Minnesota, which is a conservative group of people, and what they're doing is that they haven't been paying their electric bills, and that's very, very unusual, and I think that probably the reason why is that they don't have the income. They are paying higher mortgage payments. The amount of money that they have to put aside for increased taxation and things like that are high. And so I think they're really up against it. And so consequently, you're seeing people that are not increasing the debt because they know the position that they're in. But on the other hand, they are kind of hanging on financially. Unemployment's much higher than what it's stated. My figures show 13.5%, not 4.6%. Because once people go off the check from the state, they're no longer counted. And there's people going back to 1990. Now, we're talking 17, 18 years here that have been out of the workforce. Now, granted, some of them, many of them work, but they're off the books, and they're working for cash somehow. And so that's rather distorted. It's hard to get a figure on it, but they're certainly not making as much money as they did before at subsistence living.
Now, you've said that inflation is running about 11%.
Correct. So the figures, you know, you see in England like 2.8, 2.9.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bob calculates that inflation here in the United States is about 11%. Government says it's 2.5%. If you take out fuel, if you take out food, if you take out anything that's going up, it's about 2.2%. I mean, they just basically juggle the figures. And notice, I mean, look up inflation. Inflation is great, 2.2%. If we delete fuel and food, well, those are two of our largest expenses. And then, of course, they delete health care. They delete, they've in the past deleted housing costs as they were going up. And they simply, the old adage, figures don't lie, but liars can figure, explains why they can tell us that inflation is 2.2%. But are you going to believe what they tell you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? Go ahead, Bob.
Well, that's true. And so in England, I think that the figures are probably somewhere around 7 or 8%. They have a boom going on in housing. It's not going to stop. There's massive amounts of money moving in from Russia in particular. Russia's doing enormously well. and a lot of wealth is being made. And the first thing they do is get themselves a house, usually in the London area, which is the southeast of England. And they make up about 50% of the people who buy houses that cost over $400,000. And so this boom in England just continues and continues and continues. And it's very inflationary. And starter homes, they're running around $350,000. And that's a pretty high price. I mean, starter homes in the United States, you can probably get one for $200,000 to $250,000 if you go into the proper area, but just to make a comparison. But the inflation's there worldwide. They're all doing the same thing. They're all increasing money supply. Now, they have been raising interest rates, but if they're neutralized, the interest rates are neutralized by the amount of M3 that they're throwing into the system. There's a lot of credit that's created by outside forces such as hedge funds and derivative creators and things like that. So the figure is probably well over 15%.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now a lot of the hedge funds are getting into trouble, and we see some of them are actually beginning to actually be closed down. So this is just the beginning, isn't it? I'm closing out hedge funds.
The beginning of the beginning is what I call it. And it's going to get far, far worse. We're in recession, and that recession will continue to get worse, get aggravated, and it'll last a long time. The recession is extraordinarily difficult because you have unemployment at a high rate, and you have dropping wages, actually, and then you have wages that buying power is being diminished by inflation, and so you know, it's the worst of all worlds. And then on top of it, you have outsourcing and offshoring of jobs. One of the problems today in the area of housing is that a lot of the people who are losing homes right now are not all, not just the people who have subprime and ALTA loans. There's a lot of people who have A loans, who have good credit ratings, who have lost their jobs. And they're losing their homes as well. And so I think we're spiraling, and it's just beginning, into a three-year period of just straight down. And that'll bring down the stock market, and it will also bring down the bond market. And, of course, the real estate market's well on its way. And so I think we're in for a big heap of trouble. As interest rates go up, gold and silver will go up. That's what happened during the 1970s. And I expect that will continue to happen. And you'll see gold at much higher prices.
All right, fine. Well, I think that we're really going to see some very, very difficult things. I do not believe we can believe any of the government figures. I believe that Bob is probably right. Unemployment is much higher than we're being told. Certainly inflation is much higher than we're being told. And they're really not being forthright because they don't want the people to know what's going on. They've stopped publishing the M3 figures. That is the M3 figures. Because they do not want the American people to realize how much credit is being created. And this is all inflationary. And so we're really beginning to see this whole system begin to crumble. But it is planned that way. They are intentionally shipping our jobs overseas. They're intentionally bringing in the illegal immigrants to drive down wages in many, many fields. And, you know, when you lose your job, then, of course, you're going to have to go out and compete with an illegal immigrant at his wage level. That's the big problem.
Well, I think the illegal immigrant problem was deliberately created in order to act as a cover for the inclusion of the North American Union and the elimination of borders and the amalgamation of the three countries. And I think the first amnesty attempt, I think, was a false bill, a false attempt to keep everybody's eye on that ball, and then when it didn't happen, they turn around the following week, which is this week, and now they're trying to put another one together. And they're bound and determined to do that because they want to open the borders up. And that's going to create massive problems.
Well, it's really going to, because it's going to bankrupt our medical care system, it's going to bankrupt our schools, and it's going to bankrupt our social welfare system and Social Security and Medicare.
Well, Heritage Foundation says that under one set of circumstances over the next 10 years, the cost will be $2.5 trillion. In the second set of circumstances, looks to be $5 trillion. And they spent a lot of time on that. And, of course, you don't see that in the media because they don't want you to know that. And so they... I'm getting a little bit like you. This is my fifth show today. They don't want you to know that, so they try to hide it, although Lou Dobbs said it on his program. I don't think anybody else did. And the people who are running things from behind the scenes, we all know who they are, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, et cetera, the Illuminati. They don't care what it costs. They don't care what we think. They're going to do what they want to do. And that is extremely problematic for us because the tremendous cost. And there's a tremendous social issue here, too, because you've got over 20 million people in the country who, many of them, speak very little English. Average education is 3 to 6 years. Most of them are functionally illiterate in their own language, never mind English. And they also, many of them, several hundred thousand, are already out of jobs because of the construction industry, and that's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. They're the last in and the first out. And so you've got a terrific social problem here because these people got to eat, and when forced to, they will turn to crime. And that means that the crime problem is going to escalate. And that means that that could turn into major social unrest against groups of people. And so you not only have the political aspect and the financial and the economic, but you have a social aspect to this that most people don't consider. And as you know, Americans, too, only live maybe to 3 paychecks. And after that, you can kiss it goodbye because they certainly don't have any money saved. Their savings rate is minus 1.5%. And, of course, their debt ratios are fairly high, personally, just like our government is. And so they lose their jobs. They're in a real pickle. And I expect 1 million people will lose their homes. And I think the losses will run something on the order of probably around 1.4 to 1.6 trillion dollars, and that is not going to include the collateralized debt obligation losses, which are packages of mortgages that were sold to professional risk takers. and about 60% of them were sold to the hedge fund people.
And I think they're going to lose an awful lot of money there. An awful lot of rich people are putting the money in things. They're going to get 20 or 30% may find that they're going to lose 20 or 30% before this is over. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. We'll pick up the story there, Bob.
So we have the social aspects of what's going on. And
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Started to get bad in November. They've been lifted up a little bit in the last couple of months, but I I believe it's temporary. I think it's going to get worse again. And so we get a very, very rough road. And, you know, switching over from the domestic economic problems, you're also looking at domestic economic problems that reach out to Iraq and Afghanistan and now Sudan. And we have a president in NATO moving, they call them defensive, but they're offensive weapons, into Poland, and they've created a new Cold War. The Russians just came up with a new missile system. The treaty that they made in 1990 and again in 1992, not to move NATO into Eastern Europe and not to put any weapons in that area. The upshot of that is that they've broken their word, the United States and Europe. And we got a lot of things boiling in the pot, so to speak. And I think those are going to come into play in a big way. And so we're looking down the sight of a gun, and I don't see any way of putting it off.
Well, I think it's so interesting that President Bush insists that those missiles we're putting in Eastern Europe aren't there for Russia's to defend us from Russia. They're there to defend Europe from Iran. And you know what? I don't think he's telling the truth. And I will tell you, the Russians don't believe he's telling the truth. And the Europeans don't believe he's telling the truth. What's amazing to me is so many Americans do believe he's telling the truth. Why would you want to be putting these missile sites in Europe to defend Europe from Iran? Why would Iran be going to attack Europe? Unless, of course, we were planning on going to war with Iran. That's the only logical explanation.
Well, that's true. And I know that the heads of the Illuminati in Europe have said they don't want to go into Iran, and they've kept Bush from going in there. And I don't think they will go into Iran. But there's other things that they're working on. So, and I think too, it's going to be some time before they can solve their problems in Iraq. It might be years, unless they just tell the insurgents, "Look, we're leaving town. You guys cool it and let us get out of here." But the oil companies won't let that happen because they want the oil. And so, you know, that's where everything's headed, and it's not good.
Well, Bob, I hope you're right and I'm wrong. But I have a gut feeling that we are going into Iran. The reason they got rid of General Pace, because he would have objected to a nuclear strike. And I believe that's exactly what they intend. Maybe just use tactical nuclear weapons. I hope and pray you're right and that I'm wrong, because that would be the greatest disaster we could possibly face.
Well, I agree with you, because it would involve nuclear warfare, and I think the U.S. is just itching to use nuclear warfare. That's my opinion.
I think you're absolutely right, and certainly there's many people, at least Paul Craig Roberts, who I have the greatest respect for, has written a recent article saying that's why they fired Pace. He would have objected to using the nuclear weapons. So they put a yes man in as head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and then we can have our nuclear war, just like George Bush wants. I should say the people behind him were really, of course, Dick Cheney. Well, we're going to be back in just in a moment with Bob as we explore what's going on economically. But if we get into a war with Iran, I think you can perhaps forget about the American dollar. I believe that this would be so costly and so expensive that the rest of the world would begin to divest themselves of dollars so quickly that we would see a flood of currencies coming back into this country. The dollar would cease to be the reserve currency of the world, and it would lead to an economic catastrophe in America. Hope and pray that I'm wrong. We'll be back in a moment with Bob to explore these thoughts. If you have a question, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Bob, we're going to pick the story up. Bob, are you there?
Well, you were saying that...
I was just saying, if we got into a war with Iran, we would lose the reserve status of the dollar.
Well, I think we're going to lose it anyway. People have started diversifying. I noticed that the flow of funds has abated. And coming in from foreign governments just in the last couple of months, whether that will continue or not, I don't know. But I think foreigners are lightening up, and as long as that's going on, you're definitely going to have a situation where the dollar is going to continue to have pressure on it. And I had a recovery here just recently, and the recovery was kind of limp, and it's starting to go back down to test on the dollar index, 81.5 again, where they've been defending it. And it's only a matter of time. And that's why I tell people to continue to get into gold and silver-related assets. I mean, the coins and both gold and silver have gone up, and the stocks have done enormously well. We have people who, some of them, made fortunes already in the gold and silver shares, and we got a long way to go. I was on with Butch Parr tonight, and you know Reverend Butch Parr.
Oh, sure.
And so about 10 years ago, he said, what do I do? I said, well, go out and buy some silver. And I told him what to do. And it was 4.5 then, and he didn't have a lot of money. But he bought $3,000 worth of silver, and he just sold it for $11,000 and paid the remainder of his house off. And he was telling everybody on the air what a genius I was. But it's good to hear stories like that. You don't hear many of them. And it makes you feel good that you're helping people.
Right. Well, I think that we're in for some very, very difficult times. And but it all gets back to the thing that when you have a paper currency, it eventually returns to its true value, the value of the paper. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, Dr. Stan, go ahead, Bob. My voice is beginning to fail.
Well, you know, when you talk as much as we do, that happens. I'm surprised that I stood up this well today. I'm just a little tired, so I'm kind of slow on the uptake, so to speak. But the knowledge is still there. It's
right.
Still coming out, and I've retained my voice, so we're fortunate.
All right, you hang on. Let's go and see what Richard... Richard is calling from Texas. Hi, Richard.
Oh,
how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
We're doing just fine.
And speak up.
It sounds like you're under the weather a little, Dr.
Yeah, I'm afraid I am, but could you speak up just a little bit, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Bob Chapman has often said to get out of debt and also to get into gold and silver. Well, my predicament is I've got a settlement for my credit card, but I'm going to have to cash out some silver. So do you think I should... go ahead and do that, even though, you know, I'm going to lose money on the silver, I guess, but I'll save money on not having to pay, you know, years and years of exorbitant fees. Did you hear my question?
How big is the number on your credit cards?
6,000.
I'd continue to pay the minimum payments and then some if you couldn't hold on to the silver.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they gave me a deal like 35%, so it's like $1,750 is what I'd pay.
Wow.
Because I did a settlement with them, you know.
Yeah. A settlement on a higher number.
Richard,
yeah.
Is there any way you could actually get a loan on your home, a loan on the home, and then you could, I guess that would bring your interest payments down tremendously.
No, not really.
Yeah, I would. You're going to have to do the settlement. You don't have any choice.
Okay.
Because if you don't do the settlement, then you'd be whole. The bill comes back to you again.
Right, and if I just paid the minimum, I worked it out to pay it off. It'll be 10 years and about $10,500. So
you go ahead and get out.
Your situation is not unfamiliar, and I don't have any credit cards.
Well, you're smart. This is the last one I'm ever had
before, but I always paid them off when they came in. I just won't get into that situation and. But sometimes you can't avoid it, if you don't have the income and you have problems.
Well, I make guitars for a living, and it's pretty hard to compete with China and Mexico. The two biggest guitar companies in America, they consider if 40% of the cost of their guitar was incurred in America, then they put Made in USA on it. That's the truth.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, actually, the price, just the raw materials to build a neck is more for me than a finished neck made in China, believe it or not. So.
Okay. Well, Richard,
you've got to get yourself
into something. You're not competing with the Chinese because you can't win.
I'm starting to see that, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there finding the same thing. They can produce so cheaply over there, the labor is just, there's no way we can compete with them. And that's, of course...
You know, Stan, that has been the situation since the 1700s. And that's why we have always had tariffs. And, I see all these conservatives and libertarians saying, no, it's got to be a free market. They don't know what they're talking about. They're out of it. I mean, they just don't get it. I mean, what's going to happen is that the whole situation is going to get to a point where we probably won't be able to buy their output anymore. And, the Chinese are already in a position where financially they're dictating the United States.
I agree with you, and certainly they have. Do you have any idea what our reserves are here in the United States?
It's supposed to be $24 billion.
And, of course,
that's terrible.
The Chinese communists.
The Russians get over $400 billion. The Chinese get $1.3
trillion. Right.
The Japanese have got like $900 billion.
But how much do
they get? Those are the top three numbers. What do we got? We got nothing.
Well, do we have a couple of hundred billion dollars?
That hasn't been checked since 1954.
Okay.
And so, what do we got? Well, I don't know. Probably nothing. America's in serious, serious trouble. I mean, just look at the numbers. You don't have to be a genius. And it's just in simple trouble.
Well, I really think that certainly if they wanted to destroy the value of our currency, they could not be doing a better job than they're doing right now. That is my fear, and I honestly think that's exactly what they intend to do. I think there are people who want to have equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations, and that means destroying the wealth of the American people. That's what the Earth Charter says. That's what they're doing, and they're following the dictates of the Earth Charter, the new Ten Commandments for America.
Yeah, I agree completely with that, and we've discussed that before. And they're destroying the American economy because they want to bring us to our knees so that we'll have to accept world government. And, you know, also, we have that perennial problem of a dollar that's continuing to decline in value, and it's just the worst of all worlds.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Bob, if you have a question or a comment. Well, have any of the derivatives begun to unwind yet?
No, not since 1998, and we've actually been fortunate so far. But there will come a time when you'll have several collapses in a row, and after that, the game's over. And I don't think that's too far away.
For our listeners, why Warren Buffett has referred to derivatives as financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal, and of course it's his feeling that they will eventually destroy our economic system. There are over $400 trillion in derivatives out there backing up most of the economic deals in the world today, and it's simply a bet. But if they ever start to unravel, there isn't $400 trillion out there, and that whole economic house of cards would come tumbling down.
That figure is over $500 trillion now.
Is it really?
Yeah, they just keep on inventing them every day, and the whole thing is insanity. It's another way of making it float. The whole derivative sector is not regulated, and neither are the hedge funds. And there's a good reason for that. They don't want anybody to know what they're doing, just like M3, because the people would be appalled, and they'd say, stop it. And, of course, the insiders don't want to do that. What they want to do is continue to do what they're doing. And they're going to take it right to the end.
What do you
mean? They're accumulating assets, but what they're doing in the process is getting rid of dollars.
You mean they're making them dissolve because they're based upon debt and they're just simply disappearing?
They're buying things. They're buying commercial real estate and gold. And I mean, they don't tell you about that, but they are.
Well, we hear this, that Richard Cheney is investing, in a very defensive position, as if he thought the dollar would collapse. Have you heard that?
Well, no, I've quoted. I know what his holdings are. I mean, they're public knowledge, and yes, they are conservative. Most of them are in euros and non-U.S. currency, and none of them are in stocks.
Why would Richard Cheney be investing outside of America?
Because he knows that the dollar is going to collapse.
And I think that's what we have to understand. Richard Cheney knows exactly what he's doing and what's going to happen. They just want the American people to know. Well, let's go to Will, who's calling from... Hi, Will from Missouri. How are you doing, Will?
I'm doing very well, Dr. Stan. I have a question for Robert Chapman. I would like him to talk, if he would, for a couple of minutes. I'm sure he has the material in his mind to do it. In regards to the peso, we hear very little about the peso in the financial reports, and I haven't been able to find very much on the Internet about the peso. What's happening with the peso? How does it stack up to the U.S. dollar? And I'll take the comment and the answers off the air.
Thank you so much, Will.
Well, I have a question. And which peso are we talking about? There's a whole bunch of...
Well, let's talk the Mexican peso.
Yeah, we'll talk about Mexico. 1078 at 1098 this morning. The benchmark that's used in Mexico is 11 to the dollar, by and large. It's been in that relatively strong position for a number of months. It did get up to 10.5, and then it receded back to 10.70, 80 in that area. And the financial situation in Mexico is reasonably good. They are too dependent on their oil production. Mexico's problem really is not unique. It's that the rich have a good deal of their assets outside the country, and they don't pay taxes, and they don't bring those assets back in to invest that money in their own economy. And that's a killer. And they're happy living that way because the people, the 15% who control everything, continue to do so. And they throw a bone here and there to the people who live on the countryside. But the peso has done well. It's held its level for about 5 years now, trading between 10 and 11 and a half. Just a dollar, and it's a reasonably sound currency. It's certainly not the way it was before. I wouldn't be a long-term investor in the peso because, quite frankly, I don't know where it's going. You know, 80% of production in Mexico goes to the United States, so if the U.S. has a recession, Mexico's got a big problem, and that is going to happen. So they're going to have problems as well. One of the positive things about Mexico is that most of the stuff is done for cash. I would say about 20% of car loans are on time, and maybe 2% of housing is on time. Maybe it's as much as 5%. And all the rest of the cars and homes are paid for in cash. And so if they have a recession like America is going to, it's not going to be nearly as bad. And the house values won't plunge because people have to have a place to live, and that they're not leveraged. And so I would think that times could get difficult, but they're certainly not going to have the problems the United States has. If amnesty was turned down and the Mexicans in the United States were sent home, then that would be a problem, because there wouldn't be enough jobs for them of any kind. And worse than that, all the Mexican criminals would be sent back. Right now, there's relatively little crime in Mexico. And if you send all those bad people back, I mean, it is not going to be nice. So that's a long-winded answer about the Mexican peso, but those things are things to consider. If you live in Mexico, it's a different situation.
All right, fine. So basically, they do not have an economy built upon loans and interest and everybody buying things they really can't afford. And that's the trouble with our whole economy. It's all built upon debt.
Well, if the other man who won the election, AMLO, if he had officially won the election, things would be much different in Mexico. The first thing he would have done is pass legislation to make these people to bring the money home. That would have been one of the first things he did. I thought that Mexico needed socialists because the people who are running the country have legally looted it. And they continue to do so. And all the politicians in both parties are all paid off by the drug people. And people are sacrificed occasionally. And I think that after Calderon's campaign was funded in part by drug money, then he turned on them. And you don't do that. They're starting to kill federal officials, high federal officials, in places like Mexico City where they've never done that before. And they're telling the politicians, either you leave us alone and let us do what we want, we'll kill you all.
Well, let's go to Sean, who's calling from Washington. Hi, Sean. Do you have a question?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Stan. I didn't really have a question. It's more of an observation. Like one of the guys before, you know, I've had credit card debt, but looking into it, what I've really found is that all these companies are making the American people the surety for all these loans from Japan, where they're, you know, just multiplying the money when they get these loans from Japan, and then they're selling it to us. But in all reality, we're just the surety for their loans at the end of the day. So when they go bust, we end up holding the problem, and they've made all their money on the deal.
You have any thoughts on that, Bob?
Well, you're talking about the carry trade?
No, what I'm saying is, you know, like when you have credit card debt, you know, they're loaning all the money from Japan and then expanding it.
Oh, yes, the carry trade. That's true.
We end up being the surety for their loans.
Yeah, you're right. There's a whole other subject in connection with that, which is America's really a corporation.
Uh-huh.
And that'll have to come for another program.
All right, thanks very much for calling, and we'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up the program. We do have Paula calling from Spokane, so Paula, hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Bob, before we get to Paula, let's get your address out so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Well, you can call for a free introductory copy, whether by email or hard copy, toll-free, 800-375-4188, 800-375-4188. And if you want to go to the Internet, the site is theinternationalforecaster.com, International, FORECASTER.com.
Okay, Paula, do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Do you think the Illegal Alien Amnesty Act will pass? And what can we do about the whole thing, the North American Union, the whole thing?
What are your thoughts?
I think what the first thing is to contact every person in the House and Senate and say, I don't want any kind of amnesty. And they were deluged before the last vote, and that's why it turned out the way it did. And we got to keep on doing it, because our president has gone to Republican members and offered them billions of dollars to do his bidding. And, you know, the question is, are they willing to sell their souls? And unfortunately, some of them will and some of them won't, but you can help them make that decision by getting on the phone or using email and make your requests right to the point. I don't want any amnesty, and I want you to know that. Thank you very much. And that's the only way you can do it.
Paula, we don't know what's going to happen. It's really, of course, up to the American people. And, of course, remember that they are bribing the congressman. They're violating every law in this country, but they really don't care, because their real goal, of course, is to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, to merge us with Canada and Mexico as the first stepping stone towards this one world government. Going to be interesting to see how it works out. So, but your job is to try to educate people and get them calling, and let's see if we can still influence our representatives. Let's see if they represent us or the special interests. Anyway, God bless. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, Bob. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you back again real soon.
Okay, thank you, Stan, and have a good evening.
All right, very good.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Our guest has been Bob Chapman. As always, a real pleasure as we begin to watch the unraveling of our economic system. Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you'd like to really understand what's going on, let me suggest my talk on financial tsunami. There's a talk. It's available either on DVD or on VHS. there is also a syllabus that goes with that. That's the financial tsunami. We have a pamphlet called The History of Money, and if you read the two of them together, why, or listen to the talk and read the pamphlet, you'll know more than most economic professors. Then if I could suggest the book The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Anthony Sutton, and Fiat Money Inflation in France, which was written by Andrew Dickinson White over 100 years ago. Those three books and the syllabus talks I've mentioned will give you insight into what's going to happen. You're going to have to begin to make changes in your lifestyle. You're going to have to get out of debt. We have three rules of investing: diversify, diversify, and diversify. And of course, I'm not a financial advisor. I've never purported to be one. I'm an amateur historian, but I will tell you that I've been following this financial situation for 45 years now, and I really believe that we're at the end of the rope. I believe that they're going to intentionally collapse our economy and impoverish our people. What better way to enslave them and to force them into this world government? There's an excellent article in the last month's Foreign Affairs magazine on the global currency. I recommend everybody get that. You can pull it down off the internet, where they're talking about the solution to the problem would be a privately issued gold-backed currency. In other words, don't trust any of the governments. What you want to do is trust some private banking concerns that would issue a gold-backed currency for the whole world. Or maybe there would be several of them, but it would be gold-backed, because gold-backing is the only thing that has ever, down through the ages, given currency any stability. We've created a wonderful artificial prosperity. We've converted China and Russia into one of the greatest economic miracles of modern time. It's all been done with American money, created out of absolutely nothing, as part of a cruel hoax. Many people are dependent on pension funds. There's not going to be any money in those pension funds. Many people are dependent upon annuities or bonds or CDs or similar things, and they're simply going to be wiped out in the coming financial tsunami. Check these things out. Go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. But let me give you our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Go there. And then, to understand the spiritual implications of what's happening, my talk, Forbidden Secret. That's the Forbidden Secret. And my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness. Chris Pinto's two excellent DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone. That's The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone. And well, the next hour we're going to have Barry Shamish with us, and Barry will do all the talking. I think you'll enjoy what he has to say, and we'll be back in just a moment. Until then, may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest for the next hour will be Barry Samish, and of course he's an Israeli investigative reporter living in this country now because of threats on his life in Israel. So without further ado, Barry Samish, pick up the story, please.
Well, we have a new defense minister. This is this week's news. Aside from Hamas winning Gaza, which I've been saying anyways for the last 3 weeks that there's a war going on there which Hamas is going to win, we've got a defense minister, which is more my expertise. I will talk about Hamas because people seem to be very interested in that. It seems to be a setback for the plans of this Council on Foreign Relations to create a moderate Arab group out of the PLO, and lo and behold, Hamas wins, and from Israel's point of view, it's got to be great because it's not going to be a Palestinian state, and now Israeli leftists are talking about two Palestinian states, one in the West Bank and one in Gaza. They're so hard up right now for a way out of this mess. And also, I should add, you could try and sell the PLO, which to me was impossible. It couldn't be done. But trying to sell Hamas, well, that's a tough one. Now, Condoleezza Rice said something incredible this week. She said it's better that Hamas is in parliament than in the streets. Now, I don't know what the hell she means by that. You know, really, when you think about it, what kind of a deranged mind would even make a statement like that? It's actually worse for the people, anyways, of Gaza that they're in parliament and on the streets. But nonetheless, they're trying to save face, and there's a lot of reports that the Hamas have taken over the PLO's intelligence files, and every CIA agent in the Middle East is in their hands. And they've got all kinds of new weapons for blackmail. And this is what we're told Hamas gained by taking over the Gaza Strip from the PLO. From my point of view, it makes no difference whatsoever. None whatsoever. Israel has got an equal enemy with the PLO and Hamas. There's no moderate PLO. Their goal is to destroy Israel. The only difference is the Sharia, the Islamic law, is not as powerful in Ramallah as it is in Khan Yunis. That's the only difference. It's the style of the governance of these two places is the difference between what you call Orthodox Islam and what we call moderate Islam, which is just as bad, by the way. They treat their women and children just as badly in Ramallah as they do in Khan Yunis. But again, to me, it's no change. What the rockets are still landing on Sderot. Hamas has now got the Gaza Strip. What are they going to do with it? They've got the equivalent of a suburb of Chicago. They're ruling over what used to be Gush Katif and. Well, what they're ruling over is a suburb of Chicago. That's the extent of Gaza. So now Israel, as near as I can figure, can say, well, we're not going to have a Palestinian state. They're too divided. You can't make peace with Hamas. But then you have the aspect of the war that Hamas is conducting against Israel and the abandonment of Sderot. And this leads to the new defense minister, Ehud Barak.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Barry Samish. Barry, pick up the story there.
Well, we did this. We spoke about this last week, that the Labor Party was going to have a leadership fight. They threw out the Moroccan Amir Peretz, which I told you was a nightmare for the Frankist Jews, that a Moroccan would lead their party to them. They simply must have tossed and turned night after night till they got rid of him. And by the way, that war last year in Lebanon pretty well put the nails in his coffin, and who knows how much of that was deliberate. Believe me, in Israel, they're prepared to lose a war to get rid of a Moroccan in leadership power. But we now have Ehud Barak as our defense minister, and this is with Shimon Peres as president and Ehud Barak as defense minister and the idiot Ehud Olmert as prime minister. Israel is not just being run by incompetence. We're talking about really the saddest, most deceitful, most, really the most murdering factions of Israel have taken over the country, and the Israeli people have no say, none whatsoever. They go to the polls, they choose the right, and this is what they get. Now, I'm going to do a little Ehud Olmert for you. Look, right now, the people who are criticizing Olmert remember that he was prime minister and he abandoned Lebanon. As soon as he became prime minister, he gave the Council on Foreign Relations their fondest dream. He took the IDF out of Lebanon. And, you're talking about he wasn't prime minister for 10 days. And he orders the army out of Lebanon. And this, of course, led directly to last year's losing war. And, of course, no one is blaming him. He becomes defense minister. I mean, that is uncanny, really. As prime minister, his actions led directly to the first war that Israel lost. And here he is, defense minister of Israel. But that's that's almost easy to discuss the Lebanon war. What I'm going to discuss first of all is a massive scandal in Israel, and again, it's not known in America, but it is very well known in Israel, and I certainly followed it when it happened. It was in 1992. Ehud Olmert was chief of staff of the Israel Defense Forces, and he was in a base in the Negev called Sha'arim. And he was conducting a military exercise. Now, just so you know, later they claimed it was to attack Iran and knock out their nuclear facilities and all kinds of garbage.
Hold up. We'll be right back. Go right there, Barry. Just to repeat what you were saying.
Well, in Sha'arim, I believe it was July of 1992, a rocket was misfired. It landed on a group of soldiers, killing five of them and badly wounding 13. And Ehud Olmert was in the stands guiding this exercise. Now, instead of sticking around and in some way aiding and helping the wounded, Ehud Olmert, within 40 minutes, took a helicopter to Tel Aviv, no less Tel Aviv, of all places, where he met Rabin, and they planned the cover-up of this disaster. Now, a lot of soldiers complained to the newspaper Yediot Ahronot that he abandoned the wounded, that while they were fighting for the lives of these soldiers, that while five were already dead and 13 were in desperate straits, Barak, two Ehuds now in government, Barak took off in a helicopter and left everyone to fend for themselves. And I read these soldiers' reports. They were accurate. They were people like me. In 1992, I was in the army. And these were just normal soldiers who were tending their dead. They were tending their wounded. And the leader of the exercise, Ehud Barak, was on a helicopter flying to Tel Aviv. He could have put one of the wounded in his helicopter. I mean, really, to take an extreme example, but he had to stay there all day until everyone was evacuated. The leader of this exercise, the chief of staff of the IDF, had no right whatsoever to leave this scene. It was carnage, but he did leave the scene. Now, Rabin made Ehud Barak, the interior minister, And then the old aquanaut came out with this story of the chief of staff of the IDF abandoning his dead and wounded soldiers. Now, by this time, Barak had a lot to lose. Rabin wanted him in the government. He was not yet interior minister. That was coming up. And he took time off. He took, as I recall, it was about 2 weeks to prepare for his television interview. Believe me, you never saw a guiltier person in your life. You never saw anyone defending himself so superficially and so obviously that he did abandon these soldiers, that he let them, well, what can you say, die? And well, he took off. It's that simple. He got in a helicopter, and as they say, he hauled ass. He got out of there. He flew to the prime minister in Tel Aviv instead of tending to his wounded soldiers. Now, this, by the way, people, those of you who have internet, you just write Barak, and then Tse'elim, T-Z-E, and then an apostrophe, E-L-I-M, and read about this scandal. Ehud Barak is a coward. In the worst sense, he is a coward. Our new defense minister not only pulled out of Lebanon because the Council on Foreign Relations told him to, and we'll get to that shortly, but this was not the first time he had abandoned. I'm sorry. Wow, the two of us, I'll tell you, it must be a nationwide cold going around. He abandoned his soldiers. Now, I'm going to go into a little history of Ehud Barak that, well, the people, if you don't know about Tse'elim, people, it should have ruined him. He should never have survived Tse'elim, ever. Never. He should have been thrown out of politics forever and ever. But that's not what happened. Now, after Tse'elim, Barak quit the army. And we'll talk about his army career. We'll go back to it shortly. But nonetheless, he announced that he was going to America to make a lot of money before he entered politics. Now, how do you just go to America and earn a lot of money? And by the way, when he came back to Israel, he built himself a villa. A villa in Kochav Yair. He had a lot of money. He knew what he was walking into. Where did he go for about 6 months? He went to the Washington Institute of Near East Peace. Now, people, this is the institute that trains Israel's leaders. This is the institute run by the former ambassador to Israel, Martin Indyk. Now, we've never really discussed why this Australian, I repeat, he is not an American, well, he is now, I think he was given citizenship, but he is an Australian Sabbatean. In the deepest sense of the word, he became extremely powerful in the United States, opened up this institute, this supposed think tank. Barak showed up for 6 months where he was trained and what he was going to do. And amongst the things he was trained to do was to pull out of Lebanon. And this, the Washington Institute is so tied up with the Council on Foreign Relations, there are no words, but Martin Indyk is the man who founded this institute. Where did he get the money from? Where did Barak get his money to build his villa in Kochav Yair? Where is all this money being spread around to Israeli politicians coming from? And by the way, that's not an idle or a stupid question. It's a very profound question. Our leadership is being bought every which way. Now, what you've got now is a new Minister of Defense, Ehud Barak. He was the Prime Minister of Israel in the year 2000. He was thrown out of, well, the Israeli people threw him out of power within, what, a year and a half? I mean, he was a total, complete incompetent, but what people didn't understand was he was only doing what the people who bought his villa told him to do. You pull out of Lebanon, he pulled out of Lebanon. Now, I want to remind you that he didn't do it in an orderly fashion. Israel left behind unbelievable intelligence. It left behind, whole tanks were left behind. But worst of all, we had an army, the South Lebanese army, the Christian army of Southern Lebanon. They were guarding our borders. They were reliable. They were dependable. They were our allies. Barack didn't tell him he was pulling out. He left them to be tortured in prison. About 6,000 in the family, and I think the total was with their families, ran for the hills, ran to Israel as fast as they could. The remainder were arrested. Barack not only betrayed the Christians, he had them tortured. And he knew what he was doing. He knew when Israel pulled out that the Hezbollah would capture the SLA, take their officers, torture them for all their information that they could give. This was our brand new defense minister. He tortured the Christians of Lebanon, and he knew what he was doing. Now, I don't know what your listenership thinks about this, but I'm thoroughly outraged. Who can trust Israel anymore when one night the prime minister decides to abandon its allies? The Christians of Lebanon and Israel no longer have an alliance. We did have an alliance. Barack ruined it. Barack saw many, many people tortured, many, many people in prison. And I got news for you. Most were Lebanese Christians. Now, this again, it all ties up with Martin Indyk and the Washington Institute for Near East Peace. Never, never forget that. Now, I'm going to add something very important, and I've never added this before, but for the listeners who are taking me seriously and maybe doing a little research, there is an Israeli writer who has been translated into English. His name is Dr. Uri Milstein, M-I-L-S-H-T-E-I-N, Uri Milstein. He wrote a very, very valuable history of the 1948 war, but he also has written, he's alive and he's my friend. He was at my son's bar mitzvah with his, I guess you would call her partner. She is an Israeli cabinet minister's mother, Shula. This is a friend of mine. Uri Moshe wrote about Ehud Barak's behavior during the Yom Kippur War. Now, there was a battle. It was called the Battle of China Farm, which Israel lost badly. There was a unit of armored personnel carriers trapped inside this farm, or what they called the farm. They had to be rescued. A number of top leaders refused to endanger themselves and actually go and save these trapped Israelis, which, by the way, in the Israel Defense Forces, you do risk your life to free trapped soldiers and dead soldiers. Barack refused to endanger his life. He would not go into the China farm and rescue Jewish soldiers trapped inside this farm by Egyptians. He wouldn't do it. Every indication shows that Barack is nothing but a coward. Now, I hear the music, don't I?
Yes, I'm afraid you do.
Well, I'll wait till after the music when we talk about Ehud Barak, coward.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment. And, of course, Mr. Baruch is the current newly appointed defense minister of Israel. All right, Barry, go right ahead.
Look, I'm going to repeat Uri Milstein's name. For those of you who are really interested, he's got He's got a book called The Rabin File in English, which, by the way, Rabin ran from battle. Rabin was the one in 1948 who was in charge of Jerusalem, and he handed it to the Arabs. He was a coward, Rabin. All the soldiers who ever served with him said he was a coward. He has a long history of alcoholism and so on and so forth. Look, the leaders of the Palmach, that is the Frankist army unit, would have lost the war in 1948. It was the Irgun, the good Zionists, who actually showed courage and bravery and saved Israel's behind. Ehud Barak is at the camp of Rabin. Rabin was nothing but a pure-blooded coward in battle. And Uri Milstein's books, one is on the history of the 1948 war, and one is called The Rabin File, documenting his utter cowardice. These people who are our so-called heroes, Ehud Barak is Israel's most decorated officer. Ehud Barak has shown cowardice on numerous, numerous occasions, witnessed by his soldiers. Now, we spoke about the Tzelim disaster in 1992, where five soldiers were killed by an errant rocket, and 13 were badly wounded, and he escaped the exercise field. I'm going to talk about a rumor right now. I'm going to go and do a rumor. And you know what? I make a difference. When I talk about facts, the Tzelim disaster is called in Israel. It's actually called Asun Tzelim, the Tzelim disaster. Barak should have been thrown out of politics. So many soldiers saw what a coward he was. But he got advice, and he handled a TV interview where most Israelis supported him, as they always do, by the way, on these interviews. If you're loud enough and aggressive enough and you seem sincere enough, the population will support you, but a large percentage didn't. And a lot of these people were soldiers in that exercise who spoke with their family and friends and never believed a word from Ehud Barak. Barak is despised in Israel. He's despised from every corner. He's despised for abandoning Lebanon, for abandoning his own soldiers. Now, I'm going to give you a reason, and I'm going to do two more, by the way. I'm going to do the Lebanon War and the issue of the Sultan Yaakov. Even though I've spoken about it on your show, it is worthy of being repeated. But first, I want to talk about Entebbe. Yoni Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu's brother, was killed at Entebbe. I spoke on two separate occasions, both to elderly ladies whose sons were soldiers at the Entebbe raid, and they both told me the same thing. They said, "We killed Yoni Netanyahu." They would use the word, they were quite disparaging of the Ugandans. They did not consider them an enemy, but he said, "Netanyahu was shot through the back that could have only come from our side. Our side killed Yoni Netanyahu."
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Shamish. He was saying that at Entebbe, why Netanyahu's brother led the military force that rescued the Israelis there. And he was shot in the back, presumably by the Israelis, not by the enemy. Why would they have killed him, Barry?
Because Ehud Barak was there. And so, by the way, was Ephraim Sneh, who was health minister and covered up the Rabin assassination. The fact is that Yoni Netanyahu was a very handsome, very athletic man, and he was from a very distinguished right-wing family. They were not Sabbatean or Frankist Jews. I wish, well, separate issue. As he returned the hero of Entebbe, he would have been a very a powerful political force. Remember, Entebbe was July 4th, 1976. The last things these monsters running Israel want is a powerful and honest, by the way, honest, for once I'll say that word honest, right-wing leader. It was better that he would be dead than return the hero of Entebbe. Now, I've heard this over and over. I've heard it twice from actual mothers, but I've heard it from other people. The rumors are all around that Yoni Netanyahu was shot by his own people. I believe it. I'll tell you something. It just fits in with the pattern. And now I'm going to do... Oh, by the way, Bibi Netanyahu voted for Peres as president this week. We'll go back to that. There are so many subjects in this insane, asinine country of Israel. But let's stick with Ehud Barak for now. Look, I've done this on your show previously, but we have to repeat it right now. I was a soldier in the Lebanon War of 1982. I entered on the first day. I was in the central axis. The war was very well planned. There were three axes, western, eastern, and central. I was in the central axis. Also in the central axis were the poor soldiers of Sultan Yaqob. Now, here is the story. The commander of the unit around Lake Karun was Avigdor Ben-Gal. Avigdor Ben-Gal went on a jeep tour with his intelligence officer, Mickey Schatz. Mickey Schatz opened his mouth to a newspaper called Kol Ha'ir. It was not a big article, far from it. It was a minor blurb, but I understood that he didn't want a blurb. He was trying to get the truth out, and I took this blurb and I went with it. Mickey Schatz said that while he and Ben-Gal were on a jeep tour, Ehud Barak, also I'm a separate story, the Barak is a story tonight, picked up the unit radio with the maps of the war in front of him. And he ordered a religious tank unit into a Syrian ambush at a place called Sultan Yaqob. They were surrounded. 29 Israeli soldiers died. 5 were taken prisoner. Now, I've gone over the story with you that I spoke to the father of one of the prisoners, Yonah Baumol was his name, and he went on record opposing Peres' election as president, because Peres knows too much about his son's murder, and I use the word murder. He didn't, but I do. Ehud Barak murdered 29 plus 5. He murdered 30 plus Israeli Jews in the Lebanon War in order to sabotage that war so Menachem Begin, would not have a victory, a non-Sabbatean, non-Frankist victory. He murdered religious Jews. He has no right to be our defense minister. None whatsoever. He's a little monster. But there he is. He is now Israel's new defense minister.
Why did the Israeli people vote for him to lead the Labor Party?
They didn't vote for him.
But what about the Labor Party? Wasn't he elected?
The Labor Party is a different animal. They hold 12 seats out of 120 in the Knesset. 10% of the Israeli public vote for them, and I got news for you, 40% of them are Arabs.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Shemesh. Well, Barry, you go right ahead, pick the story up there.
Look, the fact of the matter is Israel is in enormous, enormous trouble right now. Part of the trouble is from Lebanon. The Hezbollah, now here is a very big story. And I, by the way, before I went on tonight's show, I went onto the internet to see if there's been any updates on a very crucial matter that happened in Israel. I guess it was a day ago. That's all. Kiryat Shmona in the north was bombed from Lebanon. Two Katyushas hit Kiryat Shmona. Are you aware of this?
No, why don't you explain that? What is it? Is that in northern?
Kiryat Shmona is the Moroccan city.
All right.
That is the target of Hezbollah missiles because Rabin many years ago cut a deal with Hezbollah that if you have to shoot rockets on Israel, at least shoot them on Kiryat Shmona, which is full of Moroccans and we don't care about them. And by the way, he may not have used those words. I may be putting those words in his mouth, but that's what he meant.
Okay, go right ahead.
Kiryat Shmona had two Katyushas fall in it 2 days ago. A third landed in a field near a place called Fribloom. Nonetheless, Hezbollah have begun bombing Israel again. Now, this is a very, very serious problem because Barak, by pulling out of the security zone that Israel had up until the year 2000 for 18 years, invited Hezbollah in to bomb Kiryat Shmona. Are you aware of the security zone in that aspect? Should I explain it?
You're wondering for our listeners. I know what it is, but you explain it to them.
Look, after the 1982 war in Lebanon, Yitzhak Rabin, it was about 1987 when the security zone was installed. There was a lot of terrorism and a lot of dead soldiers, and the Israelis wanted a way out. They didn't want to deal with the Hezbollah, so they pulled back. But they left a security zone 40 kilometers, where a Christian army led by George Chabad. It was George Chabad, in fact. No, it was not George. This is too complicated. His name was Chabad. He was a good guy, and he was Israel's ally.
Hold on, so we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before Barry goes on and explains the security zone on the north of Israel, Barry, I want you to give your website and how people can get in touch with you and get your books.
Very kind of you. My website is the Barry Chamish website. The only hard word is Chamish, Chamish. Actually, BarryChamish.net will get you there. I just found that out this week. My book. Now, the most important book, I think, is my new book, Bye Bye Gaza. You just go to lulu.com, lulu.com, and type in my name, Chamish, where it says search, and you'll get to Bye Bye Gaza. All the books are good, but that's the latest one, and it tells you a lot of what I'm saying now, but you know what? Look at all of them anyways. I recommend them. We got that over with. Now let's go to the security zone. Israel had a good 25 miles between it and Hezbollah, and it was run by the Southern Lebanese Army, a Christian army, and we had security for a really long time. Israel had security from 1987 to the year 2000. We did not have missiles falling anywhere in our north. Then Ehud Barak became prime minister. Within 2 weeks, he pulled out of the security zone. And I explained to you how he pulled out. He didn't even tell the army. He didn't even give advance warning to anyone. He simply pulled out. That simple. Now, right now, Kiryat Shmona is being rocketed with bombs from Lebanon. And who's responsible? It's Ehud Barak, our defense minister. Look, I don't know if you can see the irony in this. I mean, I hope you can see the irony in this. Folks, the man who is now Israel's defense minister, who might be going to war over Lebanon, is the one who caused the war. Is that clear enough?
It sure is. Go ahead. Barak betrayed the Christian army in Lebanon, left them to die or be killed, and didn't even give them any warning was going to pull out. So
nope, there's no more Southern Lebanese army. The Christians have gone straight downhill. They used to control Lebanon until Israel started mucking about there and Barak finished them off. We finished off the Christians of Lebanon. This is something unknown about Barak. Now, I'm going to do this story of the ultimate betrayal of Barak. And folks, I've done it before. Maybe it'll sink in now. It's a major story. We're going back again to the war I participated in. This is my personal war. I've got war stories. If there was a Legion Hall somewhere in Florida, I would be going there and drinking beer and throwing darts. Okay? This is my war. There were 5 soldiers kidnapped. 3 were not returned. I spoke to the father of one, Mr. Baumel. I don't know his first name. I know his son's name was Yonah Baumel. He is dead, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. I said to him, Mr. Baumel, if you want your son back, you have got to open your mouth and say that Ehud Barak murdered him. He was the one who picked up the radio knowing, looking at a map, and he sent a religious tank unit to die, all to sabotage Begin's war. This was all being done. It was coordinated at the highest levels. Shimon Peres and Yossi Sarit, even in the United States, the thief Sandy Berger, I guess you know about him, and sticking documents down his front pants. Sandy Berger of the CFR, nationally the CFR, he was leading a campaign in the United States for Peace Now America. By the way, Sandy Berger's, Clinton's, believe it or not, defense advisor, was the head of Peace Now America, an extremely radical CIA-funded peace organization, Peace. I mean, it's a guaranteed war organization in Israel. All of these people were in a combination, and they were combining. It was a conspiracy to make sure that Begin did not get the war that he wanted. Now, amongst those people was Ariel Sharon, and we have the whole story of Sabra and Shatila, which Sharon knew exactly what he was doing. He was sabotaging Begin, and they promised him later on, things will be good for you. We've done this on our shows. And you know what? I'm going to remind people to go to the archives. This is too complicated. But the point I said to Mr. Baumel was, Ehud Barak sent your son to his death. And if you don't open your mouth and you don't start saying something, your son's memory will be for nothing. And then Peres ran for the president of Israel. And lo and behold, of course he is now the president of Israel. And who else is going to be president of Israel except the mass murderer Shimon Peres, who amongst his victims were Yitzhak Rabin, Ariel Sharon himself, Rechavam Ze'evi, the tourism minister, and many, many more. I mean, he is a really good mass murderer. Well, Baumel opened his mouth, I guess, was not even a week ago, just before the election, and said, if you elect Peres, you're electing the murderer of my son. Now, he didn't use the word murder of my son, and I'm using that word. He said that because of Peres, my son's whereabouts have never been properly explained. He was covering up for Ehud Barak. Barak was the one who sent these fine Jewish youths with wonderful parents to their deaths. And boy, I got to tell you, this Israel, if you actually believe it's a shelter for the Jews, you're wrong. It's a shelter for the Sabbateans, and they are not Jews. They are half-Jews or quarter-Jews, but they're not Jews. They despise Judaism.
All right, now for our leaders, this was all to make sure that Begin, who was a good guy,
yes,
was not successful, didn't win the war. Is that right?
Oh, he did in a way. He was going to win that war. Now, as I said, I went into that war. I'm trying to visualize it now. I remember it was June 6th. It was the middle of the night. We drove through Lebanon. It was like a nightclub. I mean, the skies were just filled with our artillery and rockets and whatever else that happened in Lebanon. And within 3 days, we had won the war. Within 3 days, we had captured all of Lebanon. Begin was going to have a resounding victory. And all he had to do at that point, really, was to pull back, leave the security zone, which he claimed Sharon Poland was the object of the war, another story, and just go back to Israel, and we had our victory. Now, but sabotage doesn't allow a person to do that. Sharon made sure that Begin stayed in Lebanon until he did a Sabbath Shatila business, killed 800 Palestinians in the camp via the Falangist army, kept them in there for 3 days. It was it's a very long and complicated story, but nonetheless, in July, that was the year that the worst tragedy of the Lebanon War was the Sultan Yaqob tragedy, and it was deliberate murder by Ehud Barak. The man is a murderer. He kills Jews. And I can't begin to tell you when I say that how much I mean it. These are people I know personally. These are people I like personally. His son is dead. Mr. Baumel's son is dead. I spoke to the man twice, and I told him, you have got to open your mouth and say that Barak gave the order. I said, the man that you have to contact is Mickey Schatz. I told him about the article in Kol HaYir, the blurb in Kol HaYir. I gave him all the background needed to put Barak on trial, like the Israeli courts are going to do something about it. But neither here nor there, he didn't do anything until last week when Peres was running for president. Like, that helped a lot. Oh, it's a bad situation, Dr. Stan. I'm telling you, it's a very bad situation.
Well, I have no question at all that's the case. So why don't you go ahead and bring us up to date on what's going on. What else is going on?
All right, I may as well. You know, I made a few little notes. You know, you phoned me this morning, and I didn't have a lot of time. But, you know, Israel's so insane that a few little notes make a whole radio show. There's so much insanity going on right now. Look, I have written this in my books. And in my book, Shapites V, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust, where I explain who the Sabbateans are and how they became the Frankists, I wrote a very simple point. I wrote that Shimon Peres paid Kurt Larsen. He was the Norwegian negotiator for the Oslo Accords. He is really a very bad person. He paid him $100,000 to get him the Nobel Prize. Now, I wrote this before an Israeli journalist named Yoav Yitzchak, who writes for Ma'ariv, he used to write for Ma'ariv, wrote the same thing, that when Rabin and Arafat, by the way, Arafat's Nobel Prize was stolen by Hamas, in an ultimate act of irony, they stole his Nobel Prize from his home in Gaza this week, but there are just so many little subjects to talk about. Nonetheless, Peres bought himself a Nobel Prize. And how did I know before Yoav Yitzchak? Well, in Israel, I used to give lectures at a good organization. It's called the Root and Branch Association. I'm not sure what they're really up to. They believe in the Noahide laws, and they appeal to Christians and Muslims to join Jews by obeying the Noahide laws. And somehow or another, I fit into their scheme of things, and their president, Ari Gallen, invited me to speak. Well, he had a person named Peter Christensen, a Norwegian who despised the way the Oslo Accords were taking off or where they were going, and he exposed the fact that Peres bribed the Nobel Prize Committee. He bribed Fuji Larson to affect the Nobel Prize Committee and make him a Nobel Prize winner. His prize is worthless. But this week, finally, there's a mediocre writer for the Jerusalem Post called Carolyn Glick, who's not a bad writer in the sense that she knows how to express herself, but she sure does not know how the world is going on. Nonetheless, she, before Paris, no, after Paris was elected, no less, exposed the fact that he bought himself a Nobel Prize. Whoopee, like I hadn't been reporting this the last 10 years. Now, let's talk about something that's going to happen this Thursday. Now, I don't know if it's going to be as violent as they say, but it's certainly leaning in that direction. Once again, the Ford Foundation funding both sides of the equation, Americans and Israelis, are going to sponsor a homosexual parade through downtown Jerusalem, just like last year. As a matter of fact, I do believe I spoke to you about this last year. Lo and behold, it's going to happen all over again. On Thursday night, they're going to have their little parade, and they're going to have all kinds of people gathered in downtown Jerusalem who protesting this parade. And look, their points are so well taken. You want a gay parade, have it through St. Mark's Square. Have it through the Sistine Chapel. You know, I mean, you take Jerusalem, and it's not the venue for a gay parade. They know what they're doing. They are heating up Israel and dividing Israel. There's one hopeful sign that 65% of Israelis think that it's an atrocity that this parade is taking place in Jerusalem. Nonetheless, we're going to have violence in Jerusalem this Thursday. And it won't be shown on American television. I'll bet you anything it won't be shown. But it's heading to a very violent confrontation on Thursday. So be prepared for that.
And the Ford Foundation is funding it?
Well, they're funding the... what's it called? You know, I wrote about this last year. In New York, at some homosexual synagogue run by one Sharon Kleinman, a lesbian so-called rabbi, she's in charge of the American visitors to the parade. She gets like a lot of money from the Ford. I think it was $85,000 for her activities. And then the Jerusalem Open House, which is the homosexual capital of Jerusalem, is being funded by the Ford Foundation, another $70,000-$80,000. They are the ones funding both sides. They're the ones creating the mess. And by the way, Ford Foundation is not very far from the Council on Foreign Relations. They give enormous amounts of money to CFR projects. They are the CFR.
Well, they certainly work very closely, along with the Rockefeller and the Carnegie Foundation, to fund the Council on Foreign Relations. You're absolutely right.
Look, it's happening in Israel that it's an experiment. It's a little experiment to see how do you destroy a country. Okay? It's that simple. If the bombs coming from Hamas aren't good enough, throw in Hezbollah. That's what you had this week. You not only had, and by the way, I'm gonna be very delicate about using DEPCA. I don't use them very often. I hardly ever use them. I've been burned too much by this DEPCA file. I've given wrong information out, and I trusted them, and now I don't anymore because I got burned outright. So now when I read DEPCA, I have to decide if their sources are real or it's from the imagination of the guy who runs DEPCA. His name is Gior Shamis, a very similar name to mine, but we are not related as far as I know. Well, anyways, he said that the Syrian-Iranian strategy is to rocket Israel slowly. You start with small barrages and end up with big barrages, and that will weaken the morale of Israel and will cause a disheartenment in the north of Israel and people leaving the north for the center of the country. Then we'll hit them with the longer range rockets. This is what Debka reported this week, that this is all part of a plan to bring down Israel, and then Hamas will show its real rockets, which are not just the pipe bombs called Qassams, and they won't be aimed at the Moroccan town of Sderot. They'll start being aimed at Tel Aviv, and little by little Israel will go down.
Hold on. All right, Barry, go right ahead, pick up the story.
Well, that's apparently the war plan of Syria, according to Debka. Now, again, it makes sense to me, or I wouldn't say it, all right? And, in fact, that's what happened. The Syrians wanted what? There were three rockets launched from Lebanon at Kiryat Shmona. Two landed. Luckily, no one was hurt. Next time, people will be hurt. And who is going to react to this horrible incursion from Lebanon? None other than the mass murderer of Jews, Ehud Barak, our new defense minister.
So what do you think he'll do?
He'll do nothing. What do you think he'll do? He'll do as good as his predecessor, Amir Peres. He'll send the Air Force in, and it won't help because now Israelis actually believe that Arabs are totally stupid, that they don't learn lessons from a war. The Arabs fought a war last year. Hezbollah, at the end, really actually did suffer pretty serious losses from the Israeli Air Force. They lost a lot of bunkers. So now they got bunker-making equipment, and these bunkers are 70 meters below the earth. That's 200 feet. No airplane can bomb a bunker 200 feet below the ground. That is some shelter. And by the way, the forces supposedly preventing this in southern Lebanon are the Vatican forces. Let us not forget that Condoleezza Rice had a conference in Rome, no less, in Rome. Oh, and by the way, Bush met the Pope this week to discuss the Middle East. That's what they discussed, the Middle East. Believe me, this is, you know, I have one little problem with these people who say the Jesuits are behind everything. The fact of the matter is the Sabbateans or the Frankists are behind an awful lot of stuff themselves, and it's not only Jesuits. But the fact remains is they're pretty darn serious about what they do. They determine that Israel goes. Bush meets Ratzinger, the German Pope, who wants Charlemagne's Holy Roman Empire reestablished in the Holy Land, and he's probably going to get his way. They've got a compromise going of some kind, but what that compromise means is that Israel goes, and we get Jerusalem, and you can keep the rest. I mean, who knows what deal was cut with them, but last summer...
Hold that thought right there, Barry. Okay, you can go right ahead.
Do I have much time?
I'll get about 3 minutes.
Oh, that's not much time. All right, in short, there was a conference in Rome. It was decided that the soldiers of Italy, France, and Germany, and Spain would be the soldiers comprising the so-called... separation forces between Hezbollah and Israel in southern Lebanon. Well, they've done a lot of good. Hezbollah is now thoroughly rearmed with bunkers the Israeli Air Force cannot even touch. You don't touch a bunker 200 feet under the ground. Israel is in a real pot of stew, and there's no question about that, and I'm repeating, the president is the mass murderer Shimon Peres. The defense minister is the mass murderer, Ehud Olmert, and our prime minister, Ehud Barak, pardon me for that, and our prime minister is Ehud Olmert, who is just guilty of, well, massive corruption, and with his fingers all tied up in 9/11. We'll discuss that. Maybe we'll do it again the next show. The fact of the matter is that the Jews know nothing. They're not listening to me. There are only a few bright lights who are shining now, because the situation has become so desperate that a few bright lights actually are shining. One is Tamar Yonah of Israel National Radio, who said this is the New World Order taking over now, and she announced it this week, but there are not many. Israel is in a mighty huge pickle right now.
Well, I'm sure you're right, Barry, and all we can do is just hope and pray that something is going to happen. I don't know what it is, but I don't think the Lord's going to allow it to be destroyed, although I think it's going to be under tremendous pressure, and I think an awful lot of Jews may very well be killed. Something, I hope and pray, something is going to happen. But it's going to take almost divine intervention at the present time. Would you agree to that?
Oh, more than divine, to get these people out of power. Look, if the Israeli people aren't willing to actually stage some sort of violent coup to end this so-called democracy, the Israeli democracy, they deserve whatever happens to them. That's my point of view. I paid the price badly. It's about time other people paid it as well.
Well, do you think that there's any chance the military might stage a coup to try to save Israel?
They tried that a few years ago. I report on that. Look, I'm going to talk. I'll be in Denver on July 14th at John Williams' Beit Messiah. I'll be in New York at the Seaview Jewish Center on July 22nd. I'll talk about these people. I'll talk about all the forces that the Israeli people have to overcome. And do I believe they will? No, I don't believe they will at all. But the Israelis are too cowardly to actually save their own skins. They may be brave in war, but that's all. They're cowardly where it counts right now.
Well, it's going to be so tragic, because they've fought so courageously in the past wars, and I wonder if there's any chance that they'll do it in the coming war.
In a war, they'll be fine, but they won't fight the real war against the Frankists, Sabbatean Jews. That's the war for survival, and they will undergo a Holocaust all over again rather than stand up and fight against their real enemy, the enemy from within.
Well, we're out of time, Barry. God bless you.
Thanks so much for being with us. And get over that cold. It's tough hearing you.
Oh, I know. Well, hopefully it'll be better by Thursday.
Friday.
Or Friday, whatever it is.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
Bye, all.
And this is Dr. Stan. Hopefully our voice will be better tomorrow. Anyway, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Israel and for its survival, and pray for Radio Liberty and for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.